The sun is a gigantic 1 million times the size of the planet Earth, and every time a solar flare triggers on that sun, it floods this Earth, of course, with a magnetic charge on it, and it literally changes the physics of this planet briefly. Now, on a grand scale, we can see that, but what happens and what would happen if we had a massive solar flare event around 2012, which is solar maximum of solar cycle 24, and it has been predicted to be one of the biggest in history. David Hathaway at Marshall Space Flight Center this week released his prediction. He's a solar scientist, a physicist. He says, based on the data, that solar cycle 24, at the end of it, around 2011, 2012, depending on, you know, the data and how you massage it, is going to be the most intense since Galileo ever looked at the sun through a filtered telescope 400 years ago. This is science.
Well, and so what does intense mean in this context? I mean, what is it that that he's projecting here?
He's a scientist. I'm sure he's not going to – he's already gone out on a limb because he's in a very controversial part of physics, and we really don't understand solar cycles all that well. And you know, we're really studying the sun. We've got new satellites up there taking data, and all kinds of wonderful things are going to, I'm sure, going to be revealed to us. However, now here's, let me connect back. In my near-death experience interviews, I started getting people that were telling me about events going to happen on the sun. And I said, what? And a lot of them would say they didn't know. So I kept probing, though, for years, trying to get more and more. And I, in my book, I've got all this laid out about all these interviews and all this stuff in a very logical way. But the bottom line here for our listeners tonight and this morning is to understand that the ancients tracked the sun in the precession of the equinoxes, the 26,000-year cycle of the Earth, et cetera, and the solar relationship with the Milky Way galaxy. And we're talking about Mayan stuff now and Egyptian stuff. But here's the point. We've got a Bible that most people don't understand is an astrotheological scientific document that talks always about the signs of the zodiac, the signs, you know, people are taught not to go into astrology. You know, astronomy's okay, but they don't realize that our knowledge of astronomy came from astrology, from these soothsayers, these key wise people that understood the relationship of the sun, the Milky Way, and the Earth to Earth changes and everything else, changes in consciousness, civilization, cultures. Of course, they went up and they went down with solar cycles. These 11-year events were tracked. We know this. This is good stuff. And, you know, you've got, for example, the Bible. I'll give a real quick example. Luke 21, it says, and there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear. All right. Well, what's that got to do with anything? I mean, why would someone put that in the New Testament? And this is a quote supposedly from Luke, the physician, the scientist. Why was that so important? I mean, why did they lock on to the signs in the sun, for example? Well, again, this is a rhetorical question almost, but I'm hoping I'm getting you to see that this is part of a whole picture of understanding human anatomy and physiology, consciousness, earth changes, and et cetera. As one big part of one huge cosmic puzzle piece. And, you know, Edgar Cayce knew this stuff. Edgar Cayce talked about the sun being linked to man's consciousness and that in the sunspot cycles, that was just what we had been doing 6 years or prior, 6 to 11 years prior, being fed back to us. In other words, it's a feedback loop. And when we see these dark, angry spots on the sun, the ancient said, and Edgar Cayce said as well, through trance work that he was able to do, that was our emotions, our thoughts, and our feelings being fed back to us, but it was offset in this cycle.
Well, as you were reading the quote from Luke, I want to go back over to the part you mentioned about the roiling seas you mentioned?
It says the sea and the waves roaring.
And that reminds me of the news story that I read earlier when I was promoing you coming up about that giant ice shelf breaking off of Canada, and a lot of predictions about the shrinking sea ice as it affects both currently affects the polar bears and where, you know, the fact that pretty soon we'll have some fairly temperate climates in the Arctic Circle. So if you're looking at those predictions, when you talk about the seas roaring, are we talking about, the calving of icebergs? Are we talking about massive climactic sea changes?
Yes. We're okay. talking about the fact that we're suddenly realizing what the ancients knew and why they tracked the sun and why folks like Maurice Cotterill in England, et cetera, understands about the secret science of the sun and why these were incorporated into religious documents. It's so important that the Bible itself tracks these events and has coded them in signs of the zodiac, but it's really tracking the 26,000-year cycle of the equinoxes and solstices. And the point is here that we got to realize that this energy that comes from this sun is first processed through the magnetosphere, and what it's doing, we're wrapped, and you might say, in this huge blanket of electromagnetism around the north and south poles. So we're sitting on a sphere, somewhat of a sphere, and we're rotating at 1,000 miles an hour. That's about the circumference of the Earth. That's why we have our 12-hour, 12 days when it's equal. And it's tilted at 23.5 degrees. So we're sitting on this electromagnetic motor that's tilted at an angle. That gives us our seasons. And so, winter, the sun is actually closest to us. And the summer, it's farthest away. But because in the northern hemisphere, why we have our hot and cold cycles like this is because of that tilt, of course. Now, here's the point. It seems to be from the literature, and I write about this extensively, but it looks to me like what's happening is there's a ratcheting up effect. The energy is pumped to the core of the molten Earth, and it changes the center of gravity with each solar flare input, and it's just trying to re-tilt itself, get the north, geographic north, and the north magnetic pole realigned to a certain degree, and I believe that with a tsunami in December 2004, we saw the first major ratcheting stepwise process begin. And I think we're headed, and I know we're headed, but I'm gonna try to be somewhat balanced here. Perhaps we're headed toward a major electromagnetic shift of the poles.
Hmm. And this would be, there's only one way that could go, and that's a flipping of the poles.
Flipping of the electromagnetic fields, but right. I think people are getting, maybe the heart or the cart before the horse and the horse before the cart in the wrong direction, in the sense that we're not talking about a tumbling of the Earth, of course. I do not.
Right. No, I understand
okay,
that.
But exactly.
But I just want to make sure we're not talking about the magnetic poles moving to east and west. We're talking about the magnetic north flipping to becoming the magnetic south.
Exactly. And because in 2012 is the solar maximum cycle, and because of my interviews with near-deathers who, again, have seen a huge, what they called an ectoplasma ball being ejected from the center of the sun. They didn't know the date now, but they saw this in their visions when they had their near-death experience, and they saw the Earth try to correct itself, as some put it, or change the tilt angle of the Earth. This brought on massive volcanic eruptions, tsunamis on both east and west coasts of the United States and other places around the Ring of Fire, and that this would be preceded by the melting of the icebergs, and that is what I believe we're headed.